Welcome back to episode 104 of the Weekly Tech Wrap with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
So, this is episode 104. This is possibly recording 104.
Oh, it's not been a good morning so far, has it?
It has not. So, we are facing some technical difficulties in getting this episode to you. So, we're falling back to Zoom. So, I'm going to apologize now if the audio quality isn't up to the usual standards of our high polished production that you normally would have, but yep. Hopefully this means that we can record. So as I said, this is episode 104, and it's a busy week all around for tech stories. This week we're mainly talking fines, regulatory fines, breaches. Breaches galore. There are holes everywhere. Plus, we're going to talk about the Ryzen product launch, a little bit about gaming. And then next week, because if you've been living under a rock on Mars, or quite frankly, you might not care, but the iPhone 14 was generally available last week. And Carl, I know you've got one. And so we're going to talk about that next
shiny
week. A bit of a mini review. I'll talk about the AirPods Pro Gen 2. And we'll also potentially have a chat about the Apple Watch Series 8 as well. Also, we'll talk about the NVIDIA 40 series, because there's a bit of a storm brewing at the moment around the 40 series.
And there is.
I think we need to spend a bit more time on that, given that situation.
Yeah, definitely.
So then, let's crack on. So this week, Google's been having pretty much a bad week. It's been an expensive week. It's going to get worse, I think, isn't it?
I think it is. So the first one, back in 2018, I think it was, the European Commission, they fined Google a whopping €4.3 billion, basically for abusing its dominant position in the marketplace. And this was all to do with forcing those phone and tablet manufacturers to install Google's own suite of apps and make Google the default search engine. Well, obviously, Google weren't just going to pay that up front, were they? So They appealed all the way up to Europe's General Court, which I think is the second highest court on the continent there. Basically, this hasn't gotten very far, has it? So the General Court announced their verdict of the appeal this week. And basically, they've gone with the original ruling. I mean, they have reduced the fine to $4.125 billion.
Just a little bit.
Saved a little bit of money there. I don't know why they bothered doing that, to be honest. 4.3, 4.1, it's not much in it. But yeah, Google, understandably, are, in their own words, a little disappointed that the court did not annul the decision in full. I mean, they were hopeful, weren't they?
I mean, realistically,
No
way.
No, but they've gone to say basically Android has created more choice for everyone, not less, and supports thousands of successful businesses in Europe and around the world. So, I mean, I'm going to be interested to see where Google goes with this. I mean, they could take this to the European Court of Justice, which would be the highest and the final one. I suspect they will.
I mean, you've got to wonder to yourself, are they going to win this? I don't think they will.
Oh, no, they were guilty. They were doing it. So I don't know what the stance is on this one.
I mean, ironically, I've just finished reading the Losing the Signal, which is the story of BlackBerry.
Oh, the BlackBerry one. Yeah, I meant to catch up you on that.
So I finished that last night, and this book takes you up to the early mid part of the last few years. So the sort of 2014, 2015, as John Chen took over.
Yes. Yep.
Who's still in charge now, of course, the BlackBerry. But it basically charted how BlackBerry came to be, and then how the Basile, I can't remember, in Lazarus years between basically 92 until the early 2000s. A 20-year run of BlackBerry. And, you know, you say about, you know, how Android provides more choice. You know, ironically, at the start it did, because, you know, there was nothing else. BlackBerry was the de facto phone, wasn't it? And now, you know, we've kind of gone the other way, and now we've got Google.
Less choice. We got rid of BlackBerry.
We got rid of BlackBerry, and you've got no Nokias, you've got no Symbian, you've just basically got Apple and Google.
Windows phone? No.
And it's ironic, isn't it, about the applications, because back then there were really no app stores. You know, email was the dominant application.
And instant communication, BB Messenger.
Yeah, and BlackBerry failed. They're with the playbook, with the tablet. You know, they launched with...
I bought my eyes.
They launched with a couple of thousand apps versus the 65,000 apps that were available at the iPad at the time of launch of the playbook. You know, now we're just talking about Google forcing applications on people. And it's just funny, isn't it? How things, you know, come around, yeah. You know, in that way. But I don't, you know, I think, you know, Google is saying they're disappointed that the court hasn't annulled it. You know, they're saying that, you know, as you say, they've got more choice. Yeah, they probably have got more choice, and they've democratized mobile because, yeah. You know, there's far more greater scope.
But they've got more choice of the handsets.
Exactly.
They don't have more choice of the OS.
No.
And Google are. If you want to be a Google certified device, and use the Play Store and stuff, you have to have their apps on. It's all part of the T's and C's, and unless that's changed recently. But last time I looked at this, that was still all there. So yes, they were forcing you to do it.
Yeah, you've got to cover. You've got to, you know, cover a lot of their, you know, their, as you say, T's and C's, a lot of their requirements to meet the framework, isn't it, of what becomes a, you know, standardized device running Google. And okay, you've got full Android today, haven't you? You've got Android Go, isn't it? I think, isn't it the low end one for kind of, you know, cheaper handsets in emerging markets, and of course you've got things like the enterprise approved, isn't it, for, you know, brain's gone dead, Android Enterprise. All I could say was then, that was terrible. But you're right. And Apple, obviously, on the other hand, don't do anything. But Apple is a closed ecosystem. But
Apple's not forcing apps on you. No other manufacturer, just make the handset.
Bingo. And then, okay, the same with Samsung, isn't it? Samsung have got the same problem where they are having to take on those Google applications to part of Android. But they sign, you know, very good deals with Microsoft and other companies to have a competing set of applications on their
devices.
But
then you end up with multiple apps doing the same thing on the handset. You know, with Samsung, I've got 4 messaging apps, 2 email clients, 2 stores.
Nobody said it was going to be easy.
Got choice, though.
Yeah. What are you complaining about? Be quiet.
Yeah, exactly. So, but there's been more fun for Google this week, hasn't there?
There has indeed.
And Meta. Sorry, Meta is in that one as well. So since this is chump change compared to the last one, but South Korea's the Personal Information Protection Commission, the PIPSI. have issued two large fines. I'm going to debate the word large here, but they're for privacy violations. So they fined Google $50 million, Meta $22 million dollars, I should say. So basically, this is around privacy. So neither Google nor Meta basically properly obtained consent or even inform users on how they collect and use the data, particularly regards to that behavioral analysis, you know, where they can predict your interests and, you know, you say a word out loud and all of a sudden that's all you see on your browser, that kind of stuff.
That doesn't happen, does it?
No, not at all. No, not at all. So basically in Europe, you know, unlike Korea, you know, Google actually obtains consent separately for the collection and behavior information. You can go and you can customize the adverts and what information is collected, etc. None of that happens in Korea, and it's hidden. You know, they're saying that Google hides the settings screen for agree or disagree very deep in the menus, and it's just one agree or disagree. You can't, you know, specify certain parts. And Meta just basically doesn't tell you anything unless you sign up for an account. So they still collect that information, but yeah, don't allow you to remove that. The bit that got me on this, Google have basically said it deeply regrets this and has vowed to work with the commission, but then has gone on to say in the media that they're going to fight it.
Well, I read that interestingly in a point of that was a very cultural response, wasn't it? We have deep regrets and we vow to work, you know, that's a very cultural point of, you know, apologetic, you know, to the people, apologetic to the regulators, and of course we will work with you. And to me, that you know, if that was in Japan, I'd expect a very similar response. Whereas in Europe, it's like, well, you know what? Actually, did we do something wrong? If we did, okay, we're sorry, but okay, you know,
We won't even admit we're sorry.
But the wording there was very much, you know, say, you know, we, it was deep regret, you know, and you can, you
deep
know,
regrets of what? That you got called out. Caught? Yeah. Well, deep regrets that we're not going to have a great Christmas party this year because they're taking out the staff funds.
But I mean, Facebook, though, like you say, Facebook or Meta, you know, however you want to call them, you know, them and Pip have got a bit of a checkered history, haven't they?
Oh, they have. Yeah, this isn't the first time. It's a regular occurrence. I think they've just got like a standing order set up between the bank accounts.
Oh, yeah. So what was it? They back in 2020, she said, like, you know, close to 6 million. They passed on data to other operators without information. Then again, in August of that year, then another 5 million fine, wasn't it, for creating facial recognition yeah. templates of over 200,000 people. Again, with no consent between, that was between 2018, 2019. I mean, that's just the ones we're aware of. I mean, you just don't... I mean,
yeah.
Where is this going? But
I mean, yeah. Google are bad, but Meta just take it that step further, don't they?
Yeah, but Meta always have, isn't it? Meta's view yeah. is just like, we'll, Meta's view is that classic case of we'll do it until we get caught, or we need to ask. Yeah. It's better to ask.
We've
for forgiveness.
Given you Facebook, so we're going to take everything you ever do and keep it, and all your acquaintances, whether they like Facebook or not, we'll just take the lot.
Yeah, but saying that though, I mean, Google, so that's, what was it? So that's, you know, over a billion for Europe, again, for Android, it's over 50 million for North Korea. Yeah. Well, they haven't finished, have they?
No, this one is going to sting if it actually comes anywhere near this value. So this isn't Google directly, it's Alphabet, the owner, but we'll call it Google because that's what everyone knows. They could face claims of up to 25 billion euros. In a case, it's basically alleging, again, anti-competitive conduct in relation to ad tech this time in Europe. So this time it's not a government, it's a law firm, Gerardin Partners, I'm going to say. Basically, they've announced they've launched an action on behalf of publishers who've allegedly suffered harm from Google's approach to ad tech. In fact, they've launched two claims, haven't they? It's one in the UK, oh, now we're split from Europe, and one in the Netherlands to cover the EU. And both have actually been funded by a company called Harbour, who are a kind of top-tier litigation founder. So they're the ones that fund your cases and take a percentage of what you win.
Well, if, as I say, you know, that's a good business model, given that, you know, we're looking at potentially up to $25 billion in fines here. Yeah.
And they've got a history, nice... haven't they? So they have this indeed. Law firm yeah. have done this before against Google, actually, back in June 2021. They took action in France, where it filed a complaint against Google for abusing its dominant position again. And the French Competition Authority ruled that Google's ad tech practices were in breach of the EU competition law and fined them 220 million euros. So it's Google again. It's ad tech again. It's just on a larger scale this time.
Yeah, and that was on behalf of News Corp, wasn't it? You know, let's
it was that one, yeah. And this one's on behalf, multiple. I didn't get names, but multiple publishers who have been done out of billions of euros in revenue through anti-competitive conduct.
I mean, News Corp, though, let's be honest, aren't whiter than white, but I suppose, you know...
Oh, God, no. Not in the slightest.
You know, if you're looking for you know, a quick buck, I suppose, you want it back. But yeah, I mean, this obviously hasn't gone ahead yet, but it's potentially could do. And as you say, ad tech and regulators are like, I don't know, they're like wasps at a picnic. Nobody wants either there, do they?
No, they do not.
It's not a good place. And, you know, this is, I guess, has the potential, given the history of those involved in suing, that it could go through. And if it's going to, you know, the EU will look to that French case, I guess, as setting precedent.
Quite possibly, yeah. And the UK is going to want a bit of money, you know, get our CMA involved. They'll love this.
Well, the CMA, talking to CMA then, aren't they? So the CMA are at the moment currently pursuing, or should we reviewing, the Activision Blizzard acquisition, aren't they? So
they moved into what they call phase two, haven't they, which is a kind of a full in-depth investigation into the purchase.
They are, and the wording is that they are concerned that it could lead to a substantial lessening, that's their words, not mine, of competition in the UK in the games market if Microsoft go ahead with the Activision Blizzard merger. Now, given the fact that Microsoft have been exceptionally vocal around this acquisition and to the point of pretty much as far as they're concerned, it's a done deal, isn't it?
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to let go of this, despite how much the CMA push. The Brad Smith, who's the president of Microsoft, has said that they are ready to work with the CMA.
Yep.
And they state that people want to have more access to games, not less. Well, I get your point. What we don't want to do, though, is have it that you're in walled gardens. Now, we've talked about the Game Pass situation multiple times on the show over the last couple of years. And I think there is a slight bias there. But I don't think it is a walled garden any more than Steam is a walled garden. The difference being is obviously with Game Pass, you are paying a small fee, you know, depending on your level of
service.
You're
paying for subscription,
to gain access to it. Now, what it doesn't stop, however, is any of these games being made available for sale anywhere else, does it? That's making that very clear.
Even the exclusives. They don't have exclusives. You get day one release. So all Microsoft studios, all their games, I'm pretty sure all their games, on day one release are on Game Pass for free. But they're also available on all the other stores, obviously, for a cost, because they're not a subscription, those other stores.
Exactly. So I don't see how they're going to... I couldn't argue what the competition issue is here, because you're not blocking it from other services. Microsoft have been very straight about that, unlike Sony, who still have an issue over releasing software, don't they, on exclusives.
Yeah, they love an exclusive, yep.
You know, the Call of Duty franchise is the one that keeps being pulled out as the poster child for this. Yet, Phil Spencer, who leads Xbox at Microsoft, or did, didn't he, now gaming lead, I should say, has been quite, you know, clear that they don't want to remove that. They have no intention of stopping, you know,
still
people.
Still day one release on all platforms.
Yeah, because it's not in Microsoft's interest at any stage of this to stop people playing the games. They want cross-play. They want the revenue, ultimately, and they don't want the regulators breathing down their necks. So there's a win-win by just carrying on the status quo, albeit that Microsoft own the studios.
Yeah.
But, you know...
See, the difference is Microsoft is a services company.
Bingo.
Sony is not. Microsoft don't actually care about the Xbox. I imagine they're probably making a loss or borderline nothing on it. They don't care about you buying the PC. As long as you use their services, you use Windows, you use Game Pass, they've got that reoccurring revenue. Which
it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
The whole point around the Xbox is the delivery mechanism, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I would laugh if they came off with Game Pass for PlayStation. Here, have all your PlayStation games that we own on a subscription.
I bet you it's been considered.
Of course it has. There are services, they're thinking that. I just want to get on any platform. I don't care if it's a competitions platform. We'll give them a cut, but I still want to get some money out of their users.
You know, Sony is the big ones. This is, to me, I would imagine that the complaints are coming direct from Sony, who are worried about a serious revenue loss if Call of Duty and others potentially were no longer made available on PlayStation, because... You know, that would mean that they start to lose players, wouldn't they? People would move away from PlayStation, given the woes they've had on delivery of the PS5, given the fact that their PlayStation Plus offering, whatever we call it this week.
It's pretty terrible.
It's terrible, yeah, and does not offer it. They're in a bit of a poor position. They are, I think Sony are, they're not where Sega were in the late 90s.
Oh, no.
But
I think they're still selling more PlayStations than Xboxes, from my understanding.
Oh yeah, but what I think what their concern though is they don't want to end up like Sega, do they?
No, I imagine like you and our other friend, that Game Pass swung you over to buying an Xbox and moving away from Sony's PlayStation because it was a 100%. Better value proposition.
Yeah,
a massively better value proposition.
Massively better.
Because... And even if the PlayStation was giving you better graphics, not by much, it's the same hardware, but if it was giving you a slightly smoother experience, a slightly better graphics, I don't think that would have been the bit that kept you. You know, we've all got high-end gaming PCs, so that wasn't going to sway us. We'll go to the PC for the better graphics.
No, you're exactly that point. The whole thing for me was having Game Pass, because initially we got it on the PC, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. You got it. Yeah.
So getting Game Pass was not the be-all and end-all, but Game Pass influenced it massively. And I think because of the whole point around having it on the PC and then having that cross-play and
those cloud saves, that's a big one. I start on the Xbox, I finish on the PC, vice versa. I'm always on the latest save. I don't even have to think about it. I just turn it on and there I continue where I am, whatever machine I'm on.
And that that's the proposition. And the Xbox occupies that place in my living room. And of course, I was playing DVDs on it the other day for the kids. I mean, that was weird.
Of course.
But yeah, there you go. But anyway, I digress.
Physical media.
Moving on. Oh, good God. So we're moving away from PlayStation and Sony to another good pair of friends, Arm and Qualcomm.
This is going to get messy.
Very messy.
Very messy. Yeah. Yeah.
So then, you go. I was going to say, Arm now are in litigation talks with Qualcomm, filed a lawsuit and their subsidiary, Nuvia, I think that's how we're pronouncing
this Nuvia, one. Yeah, Nuvia. I'd go with that one.
Over alleged trademark infringements and breach of licensing agreements as well.
Yeah.
And Arm are quite concerned around a certain Nuvia CPU design, which they want to be destroyed, as well as being compensated for this. So this stems from Qualcomm's acquisition of Nuvia, which happened last year.
What, $1.4 billion, I think they spent, didn't they? Buying
it was indeed. Which was to bring Nuvia's tech, processor tech, into Qualcomm to help it design, redesign
this
the cores.
This is server cores, isn't it? This is for your server machines, not for your mobile phones or anything.
And this is where it gets messy, isn't it? So, Nuvia, as an independent company, licensed ARM proprietary technology to build and design the cores.
Which is okay. And then, ARM like that, no problem.
That's fine. But when Qualcomm bought Nuvia, ARM are claiming that they didn't do any permissions to transfer or use the licenses across. And of course, Qualcomm, I wouldn't say are a competitor of ARM, but they also, you know, have their own technology division, don't they? They also license ARM in different ways. So now, as you say, ARM are asserting that the acquisition of Nuvia is a breach of license, they terminated those licenses last year. They want Qualcomm to stop using any of the technology.
And Nuvia Nuvia,
and of course they want them to remove any products on sale and destroy those products, plus pay them back a good thing. And this is about, you know, they're saying, you know, this isn't, you know, how they've got to it. ARM are saying that they made multiple good faith attempts to try and solve this problem before it got to litigation. But given the fact, as I said, that Qualcomm are one of the major key players with ARM, this could be a very acrimonious split, perhaps, isn't it? You know,
could be. But then, if this gets really, really dirty, and then they basically part ways for everything, what are they going to build their mobile chips on?
Well, that is a very good question. I think Qualcomm will put up and shut up. There'll be a bit of a moan about it, but I think they'll have to do it, because if they don't, and ARM decide to rip up license agreements, or at least go down that road, you're right. Yeah. What are Qualcomm going to do? Who are they?
Their mobile business is a hundredfold or more than what they're making on server stuff.
Who are they going to go talk to? You know,
maybe we'll see the resurgence of RISC-V as mobile. There's been talks of that, and Apple's been looking at, haven't they?
They have indeed. They have been going down that road and looking at it. But I mean, Qualcomm, who are going to Qualcomm going to knock on the door of, though, outside of those two guys? I mean,
they'll have to buy some more risk companies.
Well, you could see a whole wave of acquisitions then happening. Hopefully, there aren't any further license disagreements.
Well, RISC-V or RISC-V is open source from one of the
terms.
Who
is it that we spoke about a little while ago? There was
something far. I can't remember who it was now.
There was a RISC-V company, wasn't there, that were doing their own.
There was. What's that in?
I can't remember now, but there was one, wasn't there? I remember we.
There was.
But yeah, you know, you're right. Risk is open, completely royalty free.
Sci-Fi.
That was it. Sci-Fi, wasn't it, who had their own problem. But I don't know. I mean, we could see a resurgence there. Whether or not the reality, I don't know. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to open source versus closed, doesn't it? That's it.
It does. Yeah, it does.
And I don't think there's much. I don't think really there is much in it in the long run, is there? They're pretty neck and neck in terms of performance.
I would imagine. A couple more years, and I think, they're going to be viable, definitely. So we'll see how that one goes.
So what else we got this week then in terms of the
one of our previous employers has been a bit naughty, haven't they?
Oh yes, this is bizarre though.
It is. So the SEC basically revealed, I think it was last week before, they basically charged VMware with fraud. The Securities and Exchange Commission in the US, they've charged VMware for what they say is misleading investors about its order backlog management practices, basically pushing revenue into future quarters by delaying product deliveries to customers and concealing the company's slowing performance relative to its projections. So basically, from 2019, VMware have been taking orders, obviously, as under this quarter, but then rather than claiming under this quarter, they've pushed the delivery, and VMware can't recognize revenue until they've delivered the product. So if they're doing good in this quarter, they basically, what was the term? Sandbagging, isn't it? And pushing pushing that. The one thing we were always told not to do at VMware, as working in sales, but they're pushing that into the next quarter, and claiming it as part of that quarter. Obviously, the SEC got wind of this, and it's not something you should be doing, is it?
No, not at all. Given the fact that VMware are in the throes of the acquisition with Broadcom, which, you know, is still ongoing, nobody stepped up to buy them. So Broadcom, well done. You've got yourself a VMware. You're right. I mean, and this, you know, I'm not, you know, just to be very clear, we're not suggesting VMware are cooking the books here, but this is an accounting, this is a, you know, bad accounting.
Well, that's what
practice.
The SEC is saying.
Well, they didn't say in those words. They said, you know, they kind of fudged the numbers, I think was how it was kind of phrased, wasn't it?
To tens of millions.
But what, you know, what this is that any analysts who inquired, didn't they, around the backlog, were kept and nobody, there was no comment made about them. No. So, at any of the investor relation events, none of this was brought up, according to the SEC, I should state. And then, as you say, you know, the SEC, it's very, we've got to be very clear here. They've not been charged with fraud as such. It's a settled matter.
They got a fine, didn't they?
And VMware, VMware have not admitted or denied the findings in the SEC order. But what they have done is consented to a cease and desist order and have already paid the $8 million fine. And that was from the SEC. Just to be very clear on that point, there is no criminal activity has been stated here. It is an accountancy error.
Irregularity.
But the reality of this is that $8 million is a fine. They've probably paid their lawyers more.
They were just bought for $61 billion. So 8 million is, let's say pocket change, isn't it?
It is pocket change. And this is, to me, this is not good because this sets a very bad precedence of going into what else is happening here, potentially.
Yeah, potentially. Exactly. Considering they were shifting tens of millions to fudge numbers, 8 million is nothing.
Yeah, I just don't know, you know? It's a very peculiar... Now, there has been, and I stress, I want to make it very clear, we're not saying this, but there has been, there was a TechCrunch article published the other week that had this story. And TechCrunch, not us, just to be very clear, TechCrunch speculated whether or not how much Pat Gelsinger knew. As Pat Gelsinger left VMware in 2021 in February to come over to Intel. Now, given that this was backdated, you know, through 19 and 20, was he aware of these practices? Now, there's nothing to suggest that he has. The SEC have not made any suggestion that he has at all. Purely speculation, was he aware? That's just a statement, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know,
surprised that he wasn't. But
it is bad. Yeah. You know, pushing, you know, into following quarters, what else was going on here to suggest that? And it does look like, you know, Broadcom clearly weren't aware. Broadcom are aware now because, you know, it's public. But it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth, doesn't it? Given, as you say, having worked in that organization, having worked in sales in that organization, you know, it's made very clear of what you can and cannot do around.
This must have affected people's commission. Because by the end of the quarter, they're getting hopefully exceeding targets, which means they were put on multipliers. But they're then taking that and pushing it to the next quarter, while they'll still get commission on it. They're not getting it at a multiplier level, are they?
Yeah, this is it, isn't it? It's
It leaves a bad taste in your mouth, doesn't it?
It does leave a bad taste in your mouth, I have to say. So, moving on then. So, we've got two more stories before we quickly talk about breaches then. So the other one is NVIDIA, isn't it? So NVIDIA now, well, it turns out,
I'd say this is good news for Meta.
I think it is Meta. I think it is a Meta as well. I think, you know, this is good around. So this is another SEC filing, isn't it? I'm on the wrong story.
For Meta. Sorry. This is not good for anyone else. So
this is what happens when you have your notes in the wrong order, people. So Meta. Yes. So Meta has. Depends how you define good for Meta, isn't it? I think
It's a lack of oversight again, isn't it? So this went back to what was it? But basically, so Meta have a group they created in 2016 after the whole Facebook scandal with the 2016 presidential elections, and they built a team, 20 plus people, to they're called the Responsible Innovation Team, weren't they? And there's a kind of statement at the time that says, you know, these tools, okay, Facebook, will generate a lot of good in the world, but their very power requires a deep sense of responsibility and a commitment to making the most ethical, responsible decisions possible every day. So they built this internal team to basically regulate the company and the decisions it makes from an ethical point of view. And was this the right thing to do?
Yeah.
Well, Meta's decided they've had enough of that crap and they've just got rid of the team, haven't they?
Yeah, you're right. This is, you know, as you say, this is, a team that looks internally to basically, are we doing things wrong? Should we be doing this? Is this innovation going to cause harm? Well, as you say, Meta clearly fed up with that, because the amount of stuff that comes out of Meta, you'd start to think, what has this team been doing? Well, clearly not a lot, because they've all been let go, haven't they? Or moved on?
Reorganized, haven't they? To different departments, apparently.
That is it. And that team was, what was it, put together back in 2016, wasn't it?
Around
the elections.
Yeah, after the elections,
And, you know, there was a VP at the time, is it Margaret Gould Stewart, who had, something, she had a statement which was titled "The Breadth and Depth of Why I'm Optimistic About Facebook's Responsible Innovation Efforts." And she was quoted as saying, "These tools have generated a lot of good in the world, but their power requires deep sense of responsibility and a commitment to making the most ethically responsible decisions possible every day." Something, as you say, that, you know, when you stated that before, that Zuckerberg himself does not live, breathe, or understand. No, and I just thought to myself, when you said it, I thought, I've got to just think about that again, because Zuckerberg just doesn't get it, does not get it.
No, it doesn't affect him, does it? It's just beneath him, so he doesn't really care about it.
But so Meta are no longer doing self-regulation. Are they doing anything else at this point beyond that? I mean, we've still got several issues going on with Meta around their practices, haven't we? They are still losing ad revenue hand over fist because of the changes from iOS. We've got lawsuits pretty much in most jurisdictions, haven't we, from privacy. There's also a lawsuit, a class action lawsuit coming from, I don't want to get this wrong, is it Rohingya refugees? Which is around Myanmar, sorry, isn't it? Former Burma, where they are suggesting, it's a class action lawsuit, that Facebook, was slow to respond to hate speech and misinformation spread about the group, following the 2017 purported genocide against that group. One that was actually, according to some information, was spurred on by information that was hosted on Facebook, including the old classic sock puppet accounts set up by elements of the country's media department of the military to help, prepare information around them. So, they're doing a grand job, as they have done.
There was even one that came in last night, basically, that users now suing Meta for bypassing Apple security to spy on millions.
Excellent.
So we'll have more information on that when that comes up.
They just can't seem to get anything right in how they
don't care. They're not trying to get it right. They're just trying to get away with it.
Yeah. Remember what, as we said, I think we've said this before. Remember Google's previous motto, wasn't it? Don't be evil.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Meta just have taken that and spun it the other way, haven't they?
Let's be evil. Well, don't be good.
No. So anyway. Sorry, moving on then. So as I got it around the wrong way about the NVIDIA story before we talk about it. Another SEC filing this week has come out that NVIDIA that the government has informed NVIDIA of a new license effect, which is now going to probably cause them a massive hole in their accounting the new A100 and the H100 GPUs, which are around machine learning, aren't they, per task?
They are, things. Yeah.
That they're not allowed to export these to Russia or China, pretty much, isn't it? Or restriction.
So this all to do with stopping them using them in supercomputers for artificial intelligence kind of stuff.
Yeah. Irony, though, is that the H100 chip, which is the one that's about to be delivered, is being developed in China.
And it also affects AMD as well. They're no longer allowed to sell their new M1250 chips either for the same reason.
No, I mean, so the US Department of Commerce have said that, you know, they're not in a position at this time to outline specific policy changes, but we're taking a comprehensive approach to implement additional actions necessary related to technology, end uses, and end users to protect national US national security and foreign policy interests. Basically, we don't want the Chinese getting these super duper chips and creating great big super, you know, supercomputers that can outpace us. And by the way, we're also not letting Russia have anything anyway. Not that they were selling anything to Russia.
But Mr. China, we'd still like to make them for us.
Yeah, and this is potentially up to a $400 million hole now based on sales to Chinese companies in the third quarter. The worry, though, is that NVIDIA, the money earmarked from those sales was going to be put back into development of future products. But I do wonder, though, as you say, given that AMD and NVIDIA both have development in China. Well, AMD is more Taiwan, isn't it, I should say.
Yeah.
But NVIDIA's got Chinese development arms. How's that going to work? I mean, if you're developing the product there, it's already
there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not suggesting people are industrial espionage, but it's a bit hard, you know.
But they're not allowed to take it from China to the US and then export them back to China. So they'll just leave them in China.
Just say, I didn't bring it home with me.
I did not export it because I did not import it in the first place.
No, that's very true. We didn't at all. All right, then. So let's keep the show on the road then a bit further. So let's talk about breaches. We've got a couple to talk about. We'll move it forward. And these, I have to say, two of these out of the three are, this isn't the first time we've talked about them, is it? In terms of
No, it's not. It's not.
LastPass have had another breach. And this time, according to LastPass, they have said that they detected anomalous activity in its development environment. And now after a review, investigators have determined that a developer account was compromised and that portions of the source code and proprietary technical information has been stolen.
Yeah, and they went to, you know, it tends to kind of say that no customer data or encrypted password vaults have been accessed or taken. It's just that, you know, the code to the product. So good, no customer data has been accessed, but bad, they've now got access to the product. So I'm sure those hackers or whoever gets the source code out of this is going to be looking through that with a fine comb tooth, aren't they, to try and find any weaknesses in it. So we could potentially see malware that is able to get into your LastPass vault and access that using flaws. So there could be more to this soon.
I think there could be. And this is, you know, this isn't the first cybersecurity company that's been breached. And we've seen it very recently with the Okta hack. We saw it with the Twilio and the Cloudflare attempts, isn't it? And this is all around island hopping, isn't it? Because if you can breach the cybersecurity companies, you don't necessarily want what, you know, their information, you want the companies that they protect. So it's a kind of jumping between the islands, isn't it? Gaining access to the different parts of the ecosystem and moving on.
It is.
This is not going to go away. I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see.
We'll hear more about this soon. Coming out
the market. And then the other one is Atlassian, who
keeps
on coming around, doesn't it? Just keeps on coming back, you know. So this one's that another CVE has been published, isn't it?
Yeah, is it a 9.9 out of 10?
Brilliant.
Wow, just because we can't put 10, so we're going to put 9.9. But it's basically, it's a, what is it, a critical command injection vulnerability in multiple of their API endpoints for both their Bitbucket server and data center. And it could really allow unauthorized attackers to remotely execute malware, view, change, and even delete data stored in those repositories. So, I mean, if you've got your repository public, as it's saying, even if the user only has read permission to the private Bitbucket repository, it can still execute this code by just sending a malicious HTTP request.
I mean, 9.9 implies that this is as bad as it gets. I'm guessing if they publish a 10, it's like, look, listen, there's no point in doing anything. The house is burned down.
Turn everything off and go home.
But given that they've fixed, you know, they patched security holes in the, was it version 7 to 8.3 of the software? Apparently, according to, so far, there are no known exploits in the wild at this time. But
there will be, though.
There will be. There will be. Yeah, but, you know, so last month, Atlassian warned customers of its Bamboo, Bitbucket, Confluence, FishEye, Crucible, and Jira products. Oh, brilliant. That there were several critical flaws that were a couple of years old, wasn't it? There were vulnerabilities coming out in July based on security updates of the servlet dispatcher that we had the remote unauthenticated authentication.
That was the one, yeah.
And then June, we had the Confluence floor, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and of course, I missed out. We had also a cloud outage that had 800 customers were unable to access their data, which was back in there. Now, there was an interesting fact that 800 customers was less than 0.5% of their total customer base. But that still doesn't look good, though, does it?
That's,
you know what I mean?
That's no comfort to you if you're one of those 800 customers.
Exactly. And then the other one, that this is a new one. So I know, Carl, you've got too many notes on this, but I wanted just to mention it because we'll talk about it perhaps next week as more data comes out. But yesterday, Optus, who were the second largest telco in the Australian market, announced that they had been breached. Optus have put out a statement saying that potentially millions of customers could have been compromised by this attack. They are stating at the moment it is criminal or potentially state-sponsored based on the information that they know. And they have said, according to ScamWatch, which is run by the Australian Competition or Consumer Commission, they have stated that if you're an Optus customer, your name, date of birth, phone number, and email address may have been released. And for some customers, that could include driver's license, passport numbers as well. So this is really serious breach. And given that Optus have around 10 million subscribers,
yeah,
they haven't specified how many, but the number was significant, according to Kelly Bear, who is the CEO. So this is not good whatsoever. I mean,
this goes hand on hand, doesn't it, with the email I got this morning from I been pawned? Did you get one as well?
No, I've never flown on TAP.
I flew on TAP, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, to Portugal, so I remember.
Yeah, well, they service the Portuguese market, don't they? Yeah.
They do. So apparently they were compromised in in August this year as well. And the compromised data had my date of birth, my email address, gender, names, nationalities, phone numbers, physical addresses, and spoken languages. Everything, basically.
Everything.
So thank you very much, TAP Portugal.
So you'll be getting more of those emails of signing up for services and emails to try and...
Me and 5 million other users.
You and 5 million of your friends.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
So yes, breaches galore this week. So we'll be back next week's show to finish up updating on some of those. I suspect the TAP and the Optus one, more details will come out.
Oh yeah.
Right, let's change gear and talk about the new AMD Ryzen. Updates for Ryzen 7000, isn't it?
1000, yeah. So it's officially been launched. You can't buy one just yet, but I think it's potentially this week.
I like that. It's officially available, but you can't buy one.
Like all hardware launches in current times, maybe in another 4 years you'll be able to get one. They've launched not the full lineup. They've launched four of the new 7000 series, from the Ryzen 5 7600X. We've got a Ryzen 7 7600X and two Ryzen 9s, the 7900 and the 7950. They've basically, from a core count, it's exactly the same core layout as the 5 series. So you've got the bottom of the line, you've got 6-core 12-thread, all the way up to 16-core 32-threads. And they're all four full performance cores, I should say. I know Intel splitters between efficiency and power ones, don't they? But they've really bumped these clock speeds up. I mean, we're hitting, 5.7 gigahertz on the top one as a boost speed?
Really high, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, they bumped the cache up to 80 meg on that top one. Yes, the TDP has gone up to 170 watts on the top end one, but that's nowhere near Intel, not even close. And they are stating we're going to get, 13% IPC improvement, 29% single core performance. And they've got some interesting numbers here. So they're saying it's 50% smaller than Intel or the competitor. I mean, who else is the competitor? It's Intel, isn't it? I mean,
nobody else is making chips that compete.
No, not exactly. So 50% less area used to deliver the same performance than Intel. 47% more efficient than the competitor. But they've even gone to compare it to their current ones. And they brought out a graph, didn't they? The 7950X versus the 5950X in power use. They're saying at a 60, if you cap it to 65 watt TDP, the new chip is 74% quicker than the old one. Capped at 105 watts, it's 37%. And at the full whack, 170 watt, it's still 35% overall quicker than the old chips. So that's quite some claims.
I just, the more I see about these, the more I just think this is the way forward. It just keeps getting better, you know.
The pricing's, the top end one's only $700.
Yeah.
It's basically the same price as the old ones.
I mean, don't get me wrong, that's not cheap, you know, $700 in the current market.
No, it's not.
It's a lot, but I think when we look at it, let's take it into perspective.
When we look at the Nvidia stuff later.
Yeah, I mean, when we put it into perspective, it is quite good. I think, you know, it's not a bad place at all, given that.
I imagine we might see those come down as well. When Intel bring out their, what's the new one? Is it Raptor Lake? They're going to be bringing out or announcing next month. I reckon they're going to be looking to be competitive on price. So you might have a little price war going on. We might see these go down. But even the one I'd probably look at a 7900X.
I was thinking the same.
You know, yeah, 12 cores, which is a replacement. I've got the 3900, the non-X version. So, you know, it's 2-3 generations more. This caps out at 5.6 gigahertz. It's still got 12 cores, 24 threads. It's what, $500?
It's not bad at all, is it? I think, you know, it's, I personally am looking at that one as well, because to me that seems best bang for buck.
I mean, even depending on the performance, if their performance claims are correct, I'm considering jumping down to 7700X at $400. I mean, I'd wait for reviews and cut up whether it's worth paying the $100 or pounds more to jump up. But it might be viable if it's, you know, if the reviews are good.
Oh, it's tempting. That's all I can say. It is very tempting, yeah, given that price point. But yeah, very nice. Very nice indeed.
So yeah, I mean, obviously the other thing to come out, we won't get actual decent reviews for another couple of weeks yet. But they obviously, with a new chip, we've got a new chip set, haven't we?
We have.
This is a change now. So AMD have been using, is it the AM4 chipset for, well, donkeys now, for years and years and years. So yeah, they switched to AM5, which is a new LGA 1718. So it's an LGA one. So you don't have pins on the CPU anymore. They're all on the motherboard. So yeah, and obviously much more pins. But this brings in that DDR5, the PCI Express 5, and lots of it, doesn't it? I mean, they're even touting up to 14 of the USB 3.2 2x2 ports. So there's a lot of PCI Express bandwidth.
I could do with that.
You certainly could. Yeah,
I've run out of USB ports at the minute. So yeah,
or four or five of the ones you've got.
Yeah, so 14 would be superb. So definitely, you know, like, for me, I'm sold now. Here, take my money.
Yeah, I can't remember what DDR5 speeds are doing, but they were considerably higher out of the box than Intel's current one. So that's going to help with that bandwidth. There's a mixture. You know, we've got an X670 Extreme chipset, a normal 670, and then we've got a B650 Extreme and a normal one, and they have different mixtures of PCI Express capacity and a mixture of PCI Express 4 capacity as well. So there's a real mixture going on there. But yeah, I'm looking forward to these reviews.
I am. I'd be interested to see what actually becomes the difference between the 650E and the 670E as well.
Apart from the price, I've heard that the motherboards are going to be very pricey on these.
Yeah, because when you look at that chipset comparison there, apart from the release dates, and there's nothing, the only thing I can see different is that the X670E has two 16 speed slots.
PCI Express Gen 5 X16 slots, yeah.
Whereas the 650E is highly suggested, isn't it? But doesn't state how many buses.
Yeah, exactly. So I suppose this is going to come down to manufacturers. So it'll just be finding the right muffle manufacturer and the capacities you need. So out you need, and I think most of them are going to come with 10 gig on board now as well, so you might save a slot there.
I like it a lot. Looks very good. Okay, so we talk about, so do we, I think we should we park the Nvidia the 40 series for next week detail, or did you want to just mention that?
Maybe just give some highlights. So I mean, I'm not going to, but Nvidia at their GTC in earlier this week, it was Tuesday. They did announce the new 4000 series, but it's not quite what we're hoping for. So they just announced the top end ones. So we got a 4090, which is a beast and has a price tag to match. I've seen the pricing in the UK.
Eye watering.
£2,000. So I can't afford that one because that's a whole new PC. but it does look like a beast. So hopefully the reviews will be good. The power is 450 watts, which is a lot. But here's the bit I don't get. So they've released two 4080s a 16 gig variety and a 12 gig variety, which is a bit odd. But it's not just the RAM that changes, it's a number of CUDA cores and the clock speed and the power usage that changes. So really it's a 4080 and a 4070, I'd say. But the odd thing someone brought to my attention, I was reading something, brought to my attention, these 4080s have got a lower memory bandwidth. They're not 256 like the current 3080s are. They're using 192-bit buses, which are like 3060 width buses.
It is.
It's an odd one. I think NVIDIA have gone, you know what? They're used to paying this money now because of the lack of graphics cards. So I think we can just shaft them all, you know, give them inferior hardware than what we were going to and charge them more money.
There's something very odd going on here, isn't it? And given the reviews or previews, I should say, have come out, isn't it? There is something doesn't smell right, and it also could set a worrying precedence for the next generation as well, isn't it? Which I think is what the concern is around here.
I mean, they are still saying up to four times the performance, but there's something wrong with those charts as well, and I think they're using what NVIDIA are calling their RT overdrive. So there's new RT ray tracing cores in it, and there's a new DLS version 3, which has come in conjunction. So how much of this is software? How much is that specialist cores rather than brute performance? I don't know.
No, that's the point.
I'm just hoping AMD come out and kick their butt.
I was just going to say, but what we'll do next week, we'll spend a bit of time next week going through the details, particularly around the 4080s and how that's playing out. And where we think at the moment, you're probably, if you're looking again, the graphics card, where potentially you might be better off maybe looking at the 3090 series. But we'll talk about that next week in a bit more detail.
Because even the base 4080 is coming out in over £900.
Yeah.
Considering I bought a 3070 Ti for £500.
Yeah, I was just going to say, given the whole GPU mining crash, you know, there's a lot of stock around, isn't there?
There is, indeed. I think we'll move on to the last one of the day. And this is a short one, but we talked about it before, and we talked about Game Pass today, haven't we? So
we have.
Microsoft have officially announced Game Pass friends and family in certain geographies. Get that one out. I think Ireland, and I can't remember where the other one was.
Colombia, wasn't it?
Colombia, yes. Ireland.
Yeah, it's Colombia.
Colombia and Ireland, bizarrely. But so they've brought it in. The current Game Pass Ultimate is what? £13, euros. The new one, which will get you 5 users of Game Pass Ultimate, and it can be family as well as friends, they don't have to be in the same household, comes in at basically €22. So less than double, and you get 5 users. I think that's pretty good value.
That's not bad at all, is it? Realistically, in this climate.
I would be tempted by that one when it comes out officially in the UK.
And is that, just to be clear, is that the equivalent to Ultimate? So do you get
that? It's equivalent to Ultimate. So you get PC and Xbox for 5 users, whichever 5 users you want, basically.
That's not bad at all, is it? I know you've got multiple Xboxes in the house now and things like that. Actually, it's not bad. And I think when my kids get older and, we have additional consoles, which I'm sure will happen, it's an attractive offering. Now, obviously, prices will go up. I don't suggest they won't, but it's still a good way to look at it. But
exactly, I mean, I don't think we wouldn't even use 5 for a long time. So I could just chuck you a license.
Thank you. It's very kind of you.
Thank you very much.
I remember that. You heard it here.
Damn it! It's recorded now, isn't it?
Oops. Yeah, you heard it here first.
Hold me to that.
No, that's cool. So we don't know yet, though, do we, when that's going to launch outside of those test countries?
No.
But once it does, we'll let you know. But
I believe there will be a trade-up, won't there? You'll be able to trade in 1 month of normal Game Pass Ultimates for a percentage of a month of the family one. So you'll be able to switch to it and still keep your current subscription, your months.
Yeah, we will. Brilliant. All right, cool. Well, I think it's probably a good place for us to wrap up today. We have covered a shed load of stories. We managed to get through a recording without some failure, but hopefully when this gets out, we'll have edited it all nice and tightly so you wouldn't know any different. But we'll be back next week for episode 105, where we're going to talk about the reviews of the new Apple products, the NVIDIA debacle, I think that's probably where we're looking, and all of the latest news that comes out in the next week or so. Of course, you can find us on techrant.online for all of our show notes and information. We're on Twitter at Weekly TechRant. And of course, we'd love you to let us know what you think of the show, you know, whether it's comments, reviews, or however you want to do that. And of course, please tell your friends that you can get this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's probably the right way to look at it.
Yeah.
With that, I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good day, everyone.